Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari.
No, no, thank you.
Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari.
Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Puri Vraja Gacharja. Ashtotra Shatashishi Madhis Divine Grace Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaura Premanandi.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 11. Which text It's here, it's entirely out of normal meter. Is it is a long, very long thing there? This text. Oh, sorry, I got them. Sorry. Na yavat etam tanu brindarendra. Vidhuya mayam vayunodayena. Vimukta sango jita satsapatno. Vedatma tattvam brahmat. Tihatavat Nayavadetam Tanubrinarendra Vidhuya Mayam Vayunodayena Vimukta Sango Jita Satsapatno Vedatma tattvam brahmatiyatavat. Please chant. Prodigies. No, not, yavat, as long as, etam, this, tanubrit, one who has accepted a material body, narendra, O king, vidhuyamayam, washing away the infection accumulated because of contamination by the material world, Vayuna Udayena, by awakening of transcendental knowledge, due to good association and study of the Vedic literatures, Vimukta Sangaha, free from all material association. Jita Sapatnaha, conquering the six enemies, the five knowledge-acquiring senses and the mind. Veda knows Atma-tattvam, spiritual truth. Brahmati, he wanders. Iha, in this material world. Tavat, until that time. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. My dear King Rahugana, as long as the conditioned soul accepts the material body and is not freed from the contamination of material enjoyment, and as long as he does not conquer his six enemies and come to the platform of self-realization by awakening his spiritual knowledge, he has to wander among different places and different species of life in this material world. Purport, when one's mind is absorbed in the material conception, he thinks that he belongs to a particular nation, family, country, or creed. These are all called upadis, designations, and one has to become freed from them. Sarva-upadi-vinir-muktam. As long as one is not freed, he has to continue conditioned life in material existence. The human form of life is meant for cleansing away these misconceptions. If this is not done, one has to repeat the cycle of birth and death and thus suffer all material conditions. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jnananjadasadakaya Chakshunidhitanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. As Krishna says in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that for one who has conquered his mind, the mind is the best of friends, but for one who has failed to do so, his very mind is his greatest enemy. So in this verse, Jada Bharat is instructing King Rahugana that if one has failed to conquer the mind, then one is forced. The penalty for failing to conquer your mind is you have to serve it. It's like a war, like World War II. If the Americans conquer the Germans, then the Germans have to surrender and serve. But if the Germans conquer the Americans, then the Americans have to become subservient. So the penalty for not conquering your mind, you have to serve the mind, the dictates of the mind. As a conditioned soul, the conditioned soul is accustomed to serving the mind. Prabhupada said in one lecture, the conditioned soul gives power of attorney to the mind. So the mind then makes decisions. The mind says, okay, we're going here and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And that situation persists until you become disgusted with it. It's just a matter of time, because ultimately no one can be happy in the artificial condition being pushed around by something that you're not. The conditioned soul is being pushed around by the mind, forced to serve lust and greed, driven by these intense material desires. And that just goes on literally forever until you get tired of it. And when you get tired of it and then you begin the process of bhakti yoga, then we want to fill our mind with Krishna consciousness. Then the positive aspect of Krishna consciousness becomes very prominent. Having now understood the negative side, one then takes to the positive side. And the positive side is hearing and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. And as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are specifically interested in the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. And even there is a kind of specialization that Lord Chaitanya himself had in his Antya Lila. He was in the mood, very much in the mood of Srimati Radharani when Uddhava came to Sri Vrindavan Dham. We know that Krishna had to go to Mathura to kill Kamsa. Kamsa was so powerful, only Krishna could kill him. Actually, Kamsa had the strength of 10,000 elephants. And he was so powerful that he rounded up a whole bunch of other demons like Bakasura and Trinavarta and Denukasura, and he got them all to work for him. That's no small feat. Each of these demons was so powerful, the demigods were afraid of them. They were vying with the demigods in power. Denukasara, Trinavarta. Each demon had tremendous mystic powers. Trinavarta could make such a whirlwind that no one could see anything when he came to Vrindavan. Denukasara was extremely powerful. Just as he was running, the whole earth would shake. He was so huge and powerful. All these demons had tremendous mystic potencies. But Kamsa was the most powerful of all of them. He rounded them all up and forced them to work for him. Demons don't like to work for anybody else, so it requires force. They were forcibly engaged. First, Kamsa challenged them to a fight, and then when he defeated them, then they had to surrender. So Kamsa was the most powerful person, and he had no restraint on what he would do. He would kill babies. If it got in his way, anything that interfered with his sense gratification, there was no holds barred. When Krishna escaped his vigilance somehow or other, by Krishna's supreme mystic power, all the guards fell asleep when Krishna appeared at midnight and in the dungeon of Kamsa to Vasudeva and Devaki. So Vasudeva took Krishna across the river Jamuna and exchanged Krishna with the baby girl Yogamaya and brought Yogamaya back to the prison house and then put the shackles back on himself so Kamsa couldn't tell what was going on. And Kamsa was so cruel, he was outrageous actually. He stands out in history as being one of the greatest terrorists. He's the original terrorist. So the guards had fallen asleep by Krishna's mystic power and the chains had magically come undone. So Vasudeva put all these things back, the chains on, and closed the door, and the guards came back awake. And they heard a baby crying, so they immediately informed their master Kamsa, and this was what he was waiting for. He was waiting for the eighth child of Devaki, which was predicted to be a male child. So he's thinking, well, okay, maybe the demigods made a miscalculation somewhere, so it's a woman child, but that doesn't matter, female child. I'm going to kill it anyway. And Devaki was begging. She was actually the sister. He was so cruel, even his own sister's children he was killing. No restraint at all. So he was... Kamsa was coming cruelly, and she was Devaki was begging. She said, "You've already killed six of my children. Please just let me have this female child. The prophecy says that a girl is not to kill you. Obviously, girls are not going to fight with you and kill you." There was some slight mix-up in the programming, and a girl showed up. "So please spare this girl. I mean, she's just so cute and so innocent." Kamsa was ruthless. He grabbed her by the legs. Imagine grabbing a baby by the legs and he was going to smash her head on the stone. That's about as ruthless and cruel, utterly unscrupulous, had no conception of morals or anything, just his own sense gratification. But this time he was outclassed. He was his intention was unambiguous. He was going to kill the child, but the child happened to be Yogamaya, the sister of Krishna. And she has tremendous mystic power, so she slipped out of his grasp, even though he was, as I say, he was so powerful and so determined. She slipped out of his grasp and flew up in the sky and revealed herself as Durga, with many arms, each carrying a different weapon. And she said, "Kamsa, you fool, the child that you want to kill has already been born somewhere else." So Kamsa said, "Oh no, what's going on? Now it's really getting bad." So he had a council meeting with his ministers who were equally demonic and unscrupulous. And they came up with a plan, and the plan was nothing less than killing all children born in the last 10 days. So they just went around the countryside just killing all babies indiscriminately. Wherever they found a baby, they just slaughtered it. And they harassed saintly persons. They really carried out their proper demonic functions expertly, harassing saintly persons and making trouble in general. And Putana was specifically commissioned, the merciless Rakshasi Putana, who was expert at killing babies. That was her pastime, her fun. She just went around sucking the blood of babies. And so she smeared her breast with a deadly poison called Kalakuta. And she came, and she has all mystic power. She was actually a merciless Rakshasi, like Ravana. She was of that race of Rakshasas who have the power to change their shape. So she transformed herself into a fantastically beautiful woman. She looked like the goddess of fortune when she entered Gokul. And even Mother Yashoda and Rohini were fooled. They thought, oh, she must be some very pious lady coming to see Krishna, because everyone wanted to see Krishna. In those days, so many people were coming to see Krishna. Demigods were coming and offering prayers, and all pious people of all sorts would come to see Krishna at the house of Nanda and Yashoda. So she came into the house looking so innocent and beautiful, and everyone thought everything was okay, and she came in the back room, and there was baby Krishna lying on the bed. And then she got the realization that actually this child has unlimited power. But somehow she got covered over again. Sometimes you can read in the seventh canto, like Hiranyakasipu is giving learned instructions to his family members after Hiranyaksha was killed. He's giving actually atma-tattva, perfect knowledge, how we're not this body. We shouldn't lament because we're the soul, we're not the body. So he gave all kinds of completely Vedic instructions, Hiranyakasipu. And then he concluded, when I catch up with Vishnu, I'm going to cut off Lord Vishnu's head and drink his hot blood. So again, irrationality eclipses knowledge. We see this in our own lives. When you have a strong material desire, it causes you to forget what you should do. It actually conquers your higher intelligence. Or as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, as a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses upon which the mind focuses can carry away a person's intelligence. Because we're actually very weak. As jivas, we can easily be carried away. If you're on the streets, some particular sense object can bewilder your mind and make you forget all the knowledge. You may have studied Bhagavad Gita for 10 years, 20 years, but maya has such potency that if we're not alert, that if we allow our mind to surrender to sense objects, we can be swept away by the tide of ignorance. Except for advanced devotees who have placed Krishna within their heart, and they're always meditating on Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's name and form. They're actually aloof from the influence of maya. They're no longer attracted to sense objects. So this is our goal. We want to be so Krishna conscious that we're not swept away by any external influences of the external energy. Our Krishna consciousness becomes so strong that it's unbreakable. As Krishna says in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that determination which is sustained by yoga practice and is unbreakable, that's determination in the mode of goodness. Determination in the mode of passion is very fragile and dependent on sense gratificatory processes. When your senses are not gratified, you become fried and angry and lament. And determination in the mode of ignorance cannot even go beyond dreaming. So passion and ignorance have to be avoided at all costs. They are definitely against the program of advancing. As Jada Bharat is instructing Maharaj Ruhugana, passion and ignorance have nothing, no function other than to keep you bound up in the material world. So we have to cultivate the mode of goodness. That's why Prabhupada advised us to rise early and attend Mangalartik. Attending Mangalartik changes your whole outlook, changes how you feel the whole day. If your mind, not just your body attends the Mangalartik, but your mind should attend the Mangalartik, which means we're meditating deeply on the wonderful songs which are being sung. These were actually composed by the great Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, these eight verses that we sing. And there's a ninth verse called the Pala Shruti. There's always a ninth verse. The Pala means fruit and Shruti means hearing, the fruit of hearing. So the great Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti, informs us that by singing this Mangalartik song every day, at the time of death you're guaranteed to go back to Goloka Vrindavan and obtain direct service to the son of Nanda Maharaj. If your mind attends Mangalartik along with your body. And all of the things, the Tulsi Puja song is so powerful. One becomes a Sakhi by worshipping Tulsi with right consciousness. One becomes an associate of Srimati Radharani. Each song is imbued with so much spiritual potency if we just put our heart into it. Similarly, the pastimes Prabhupada gave us in the Krishna book, these are so powerful. When we put our complete consciousness and our heart into it, it actually changes our existence. So Krishna was carried to Gokul, and Putana came, and Krishna killed Putana. That was the first demon that he had to kill. And then he was growing up and having pastimes every day with the cowherd boys and enjoying in Sri Vrindavan Dham. But at a certain point, he had to leave Vrindavan out of duty. It's interesting, Krishna has duties to perform. He has to do certain things, he says. Actually, he doesn't really have to. This is part of the arrangement. In Goloka, in Gokul or Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna says, I have to leave. He tells his parents, I have to leave because I have to kill Kamsa. Kamsa is too powerful. No one else can kill him. Actually, Krishna has so much potency that simply by his willing it, he could have killed Kamsa. Simply by his desire, he creates unlimited universes. Even Kamsa, so powerful, Krishna could make him drop dead instantly by his mystic power. So when Krishna says that he is under the control of Daiva, higher forces, like he says, under the control of Narayan, because in Gokul, Narayan is the supreme and Krishna is just a beautiful child. So we have certain duties ordained by Narayan, so Krishna had to leave. And as he was leaving, actually just hearing that Krishna would leave, the gopis fainted and out of anxiety. Their faces turned black. Their hearts were palpitating. They fell on the ground and they were crying and begging. It was in the evening, they heard, and they stayed up the whole night. They couldn't sleep the entire night. They were just talking to each other, how we will survive without Krishna? How can we go on without seeing Krishna's beautiful lotus face, decorated with curly hair, and his traversing the paths of Vrindavan with the cows? How will we survive without Krishna? They were just in total anxiety. So in the morning, they came before Krishna with greatly pitiable eyes. This is a very moving part of the 10th canto. Akrura, he was taking Krishna and Balaram onto the chariot, and the gopis surrounded the chariot, and they began crying very intensely, Krishna, please, we cannot live without you. Even 1 second without you seems like a whole yuga. The shortest of all yugas is Kali Yuga, 432,000 years. Dvapara Yuga is twice that, 880,000. So the shortest yuga is 400,000 years. Even 1 moment without Krishna seems like an entire yuga. And Lord Chaitanya prays like that in the Shikshastaka. Yugayitam nimishena chakshusha pravishayitam. From the chakshusha, from the eyes, pravishayitam, rains. My tears are falling like rainfall. Nimisha means one eye blink, which means the blinking of an eye. So a yuga seems like the blinking of an eye seems to them like a whole yuga without Krishna. And actually, Srila Prabhupada said that this is the fastest way to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, is to cultivate the mood of separation. That is the mood that Lord Chaitanya emphasized. That we are feeling very intense longing to associate with Krishna. And when longing to associate with Krishna, that feeling of longing can be partially mitigated by reading the pastimes of the Lord, by absorbing ourselves in the pastimes, because you actually associate with Krishna to the degree that we're hearing offenselessly, we directly associate with Krishna. One can have association with Krishna just by hearing, actually, if one puts one's whole heart into it. It's a magical thing. It's described that supreme spiritual persons, pure devotees in Krishna, are non-different from sound vibration about them. In the material, the example Prabhupada gives, if you're very thirsty and you chant water, 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 your thirst is not satisfied just by chanting water, 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 because it's a material element. But by chanting Krishna's name, you actually come into association with Krishna to the degree that you're hearing and chanting offenselessly. The same is true by hearing the pastimes of the Lord, the holy name or the pastimes of the Lord. One comes into direct association with Krishna. Sometimes we say, Prabhu, I need good association. I'm really struggling. I need good association. The best association is Krishna or his pure devotees. You can associate with Narottam Das Thakur by hearing and chanting about his pastimes. Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. All of these great personalities, these are spiritual personalities. They operate beyond the laws of time and space. Many years after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had left this planet, he appeared to Prabhupada repeatedly telling him, you must take sannyas. You must take sannyas and preach in the West. And Prabhupada said, oh no, I'm not ready. I cannot do it. Prabhupada was so humble. He was supremely qualified. But still, it went on again and again. Repeatedly, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta would come in a dream to Prabhupada and say, take sannyas. Preach in the West. Finally, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta worked through his god brother, Keshava, Pragya Keshava Maharaj in Mathura. And he forced Prabhupada out of love. He lovingly forced. Sometimes our godbrothers have to give us a direction in our devotional service. We may be lost like a ship at the sea without direction. And then a godbrother will come along and say, this is what you should do with your life. And then you, as you begin thinking about his advice, then you're praying to the deities, you get a feeling. We don't hear Krishna directly. We get a feeling, this is the right thing. This is what I should do with my life. And it's confirmed. It's, of course, in consonance with Shastra. It's confirmed by advanced devotees that you associate with. You get advice from advanced devotees. And ultimately, Krishna gives you inspiration within the heart that you're on the right track. If you're very exalted, like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, when he was thinking to compose Chaitanya Charitamrita, the great devotees, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas residing in Vrindavan, were in terrible anxiety because Lord Chaitanya didn't let them go to Jagannath Puri except for an occasional visit. So Rupa and Sanatan, for 18 years they couldn't go except for an occasional visit. And Lord Chaitanya was doing his incredible leelas in his pastimes in Jagannath Puri for the last 18 years, and the devotees would give anything to be there. But Lord Chaitanya ordered them, no, you must preach in Vrindavan and other places. So they couldn't go there. So after Lord Chaitanya left the planet, they begged Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who had associated with Raghunath Das Goswami, who was the secretary of Swarup Damodar, who knew all the leelas of the Lord. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was basically the only person alive who knew the final Ancha Leela, the last 18-year pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. So all the Vaishnavas were so eager, Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and all the great devotees living there in Vrindavan, they wanted to know the final pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. So they begged Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, please write Chaitanya Charitamrita, the final pastimes. Vrindavan Das Thakur had already elaborately written the earlier pastimes in Navadvip. So they begged him, and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is the emblem of humility. He's the topmost, he's so intimate, he's such an exalted Vaishnava, but he was so humble. He thought, I'm lower than a worm in stool. He writes this in Adityadeva chapter 5, just to teach us the right mentality. He said, I'm lower than a worm in stool, I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. He's honestly feeling like that. Although he was so exalted, he actually wrote the Govinda Lilamrita. He got the title Kaviraj, not for Chaitanya Charitamrita, but for an earlier work. He was already recognized for his earlier work called Govinda Lilamrita, which describes the Ashtakaliya Lila, the eightfold pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, the eternal Nitya Lila. And he wrote it so eloquently, he's called Kaviraj. Kavi means poet and Raj means king. King of poets, Kaviraj, he got the title. He was such a topmost intimate associate, actually an associate of Srimati Radharani. But he was thinking, I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. Just see, Vaishnav humility. And that wasn't enough. He said, to go on describing himself, he said, if anyone hears my name, he loses all the results of his pious activities. Just by hearing my name. And if anyone speaks my name, he immediately becomes a sinful person just by saying my name. He truly said that. It's not a show. He honestly feels like this. And Prabhupada also would show the great humility. It's an inconceivable thing. They're so highly qualified, but at the same time, they're so humble. Whereas persons who are not so qualified are very eager to advertise themselves. This is one of the things, the inconceivable aspects of a pure soul, is they don't feel themselves very exalted. They don't feel that they're very, they truly don't feel it. We can't realize how, because obviously they're very great persons. Everything about a pure devotee is inconceivable. So this is just one of another inconceivable aspect to be categorized with these pure devotees of the highest caliber. So they ordered him, and he, after receiving the order of the many advanced devotees there, then he said, yes, this is very, I must do it because the Vaishnavas have ordered me. But he went to the Madan Mohan deity to get confirmation. And this is something very interesting in Vaishnavism. The garland slipped. As soon as he prayed very earnestly to the deity, like you can go after class and pray to the deity, and if you're on the caliber of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, what happens is something magical occurs. The garland slips down from the deity. The garland just breaks apart and falls down. So the pujari brings it in. brought it and gave it to Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami. So that signified that the Lord himself wanted him to write Chaitanya Charitamrita. And another amazing thing about the composition is he was 90 years old. He writes in the book, he says, I can't remember anything. My hand is shaking so badly I can't even write, but still somehow the pen is moving. Things are coming into my mind. It's actually being dictated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very exalted devotees are so pure that when they write, it's actually being dictated directly by the Lord. Prabhupada also, one time the devotees asked him, Prabhupada admitted that Krishna is actually writing these books. Krishna is writing these books. Prabhupada's books are actually dictated by Krishna within the heart. Because pure souls, they see their Ishtadev, their worshipful Lord, situated in the core of the heart. And Prabhupada made sure we had the pastimes of Vrindavan. He interrupted his own life's work, Bhagavatam, to make sure we had the pastimes of Sri Vrindavan Dham. And Lord Chaitanya in his Anti Lila, he concentrated on the mood of separation. It's a very moving scene when Akura comes to take Krishna away, Krishna and Balaram. So the gopis surrounded the chariot and they were begging Krishna with pitiable eyes. They were crying and Krishna was very deeply affected. Krishna also has a very deep, as the gopis had a deep feeling of impending separation, Krishna also feels separation from his pure devotees very intensely. Prabhupada writes this in chapter 46 of the Krishna book. Chapter 46, Uddhava visits Vrindavan. Prabhupada writes, as the residents of Sri Vrindavan Dham were always feeling separation from Krishna, Krishna was always feeling separation from them. So he wanted to send Uddhava to solace them, to give them solace, consolation. Because the residents of Vrindavan, their hearts were breaking. As I mentioned, every second seemed like a yuga, and now years had gone by. So you can imagine the years. It's uncountable millions of years was their psychological experience. It was so intense, actually, they became dysfunctional. It's described by the great acharyas. They couldn't sweep the floor. The dirt was accumulating. They couldn't cook anything. They couldn't perform any household duties. Actually, they were fasting. They didn't eat anything. Their bodies were sustained by mystic power because they have spiritual bodies, actually. They don't have ordinary material bodies. No one cooked, no one ate, they stopped churning the butter, they stopped cleaning their floors, all they would do is sit down and talk about Krishna with each other and cry rivers of tears. Nanda Maharaj was crying so many tears he would soak the entire, he had a pillow and his clothes and a couch and all of them were soaked with his tears. Such was his devotion. Mother Yashoda, just by thinking of Krishna, she has a mystic power. Milk comes spontaneously from her breasts. Just by thinking of her beloved son, milk would pour from her breasts. Even when she was very old, 100 years old, and when she came to visit Krishna at the holy place of Kurukshetra, later on when the residents of Vrindavan came to meet up with Krishna during a solar eclipse, Mother Yashoda, when she would see her son, milk would spontaneously come from her breasts out of pure love and devotion. And when she would embrace Krishna, she would wet Krishna with the milk, so much milk. She would bathe Krishna with the milk and the tears, a combination of the tears from her eyes and the milk from her breasts. Such was her unlimited devotion. So Krishna is in the hearts of all living entities, of course, and especially in the hearts of all pure devotees. He resides there with great interest. He resides out of duty in the hearts of everyone as Paramatma, but he resides very happily in the hearts of those who are pure. So he cannot be indifferent to the intense feelings of separation of his pure devotees. So what he did is he sent Uddhava, who looks just like him. He sent Uddhava to Vrindavan for two reasons, actually. One was to pacify the residents of Vrindavan. The other was to teach Uddhava about a dimension of bhakti that he was not familiar with. But he was already a pure devotee of the highest standard. But he was not a pure devotee of the intimate mood of Vrindavan. He was a pure devotee in the Aishwarya conception, which is prominent in Vaikuntha, Dwarka, and Mathura. Aishwarya means opulence or power. Krishna's grandeur and majesty, which is prominent in Vaikuntha. How Krishna exists in every atom and controls everything and creates unlimited universes. That's the Aishwarya conception of God, which is completely valid, of course, but it's not as intimate. So Krishna sent Uddhava to learn about a higher dimension of bhakti. with which he and the Yadu dynasty were not familiar. One day as Krishna sat on a bedstead resembling the foam of milk, Sri Krishna was absorbed in thoughts of his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan. Remembering the intense separation experienced by the Vrajvasis, Vrajvasi means residents of Vraj. Vraj is short for Vrindavan. Vasi means resident. So Vrajvasi means the residents of Vrindavan, Madhya Yashoda, Nandaraj, the cowherd boys, Srimati Radharani, and the gopis. Sri Krishna, who relieves the distress of the surrendered souls, took the hand of his dear friend Uddhava. As tears rolled down Krishna's cheeks, his voice choked with emotion and his lotus hands trembled. If it's so intense it can even make God tremble, it must be very intense, this feeling of ecstatic love and separation. It's so intense that Lord Chaitanya concentrated on this mood, and Krishna himself reveled in this intense ecstatic mood of separation. As tears rolled down Krishna's cheeks, his voice choked with emotion, and his lotus hands trembled. Sri Krishna sorrowfully gazed into the eyes of intelligent Uddhava, who was astonished at the distress of his beloved friend. With great difficulty, Krishna composed himself and spoke the following words: "Dear gentle Uddhava, I remember the day when I left Vrindavan and went to Mathura. As I was leaving on a Krura's chariot, the gopis followed me for a great distance, their eyes filled with tears, hoping I would leave them some instruction. Seeing their intense lamentation, I tried to console them and sent them a message with the loving promise, 'I shall return.'" As he spoke these words, Lord Krishna became overwhelmed by many conflicting ecstasies that he could subdue only with great difficulty and after a long time. So intense were these feelings. Even if something is difficult for God to do, it must be really something. To subdue these intense ecstasies required a great endeavor upon the effort of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who effortlessly creates millions of universes. Uddhava, the dear friend, was very concerned by Krishna's feelings of separation and agreed to go to Sri Vrindavan Dham. Uddhava rode upon the chariot with which Sri Krishna had left Vraj and appeared there in the evening. Uddhava saw many young gopas headed by Sridhama playing flutes and charming ragas and singing of Krishna's pastimes. He approached them, who mistook Uddhava for their beloved Gopal, because Uddhava looks just like Krishna, practically the same. So at first the cowherd boys thought Krishna has returned, and in great excitement they surrounded his chariot as bumblebees surround honey. Uddhava descended from the chariot, bowed before them, and embraced each and every gopa, and finally disclosed his identity, saying, "O Sridhama," Sridhama is one of the principal gopas. Gopa means cowherd boys, those who herd the cows with Krishna. So Sridhama, Sudhama, Subal, Madhumangal, Stoka Krishna, and Arjuna are the names of some of the more intimate friends of Krishna. "O Sridhama, lament no longer. Put to rest all doubt about your dear friend Krishna. He who is the independent controller of all the universes takes a personal interest in your welfare and calls your names in his sleep." When Krishna was in Mathura or Dwarka, he would actually call the names of the gopis and cowherd boys in his sleep. The queens were fried. The queens in Dwarka, headed by Satyabhama and Rukmini, were completely fried. "Oh no, he loves someone more than us. He's embracing his beautiful devoted wives. But he's calling out the names of someone else." There's transcendental competition, Prabhupada says. It's not envy in like the material world, but it's actually a transcendental competition. Some other devotee is serving Krishna with greater love than me. I have to upgrade my devotional service. It's not very good. My service is deficient. It has to be improved. It's not like in the material where you want to cut down your opponent. You want to cut him down and kill him and get rid of him. You know, in the material, you're envious of someone else in the material. It's a devotee becomes jubilant. This devotee is so good so expert at serving Krishna, I have to learn from him or her how to serve Krishna better. There's no question of trying to pull them down. Actually, you glorify the other Vaishnavas. So Satyabhan and Rukmini, they're thinking, these gopis in Vraj must be really something. Even he's embracing us to his lotus chest and he's calling out their names. We have to do something about this. We have to upgrade our devotional service. Devotees are always thinking how to improve. They're never satisfied, even though they may be so expert. Even though Parameshwara distributes 200 Bhagavatas a day, that's not enough. He's always lamenting, I'm doing nothing to serve Krishna. This is how a real devotee thinks, actually, Prabhupada explained. A real devotee thinks, I'm doing very little to serve Krishna, even though he may be doing huge devotional service. At the 1974 Ratha Yatra, just before the parade began, Prabhupada was there, and some of the devotees were saying, Prabhupada, you're so amazing. Among all great Vaishnavas, you were chosen to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Prabhupada, with great emotion, he hooked his thumb through his neck beads. He held up his neck beads and said, I'm just the dog. This is my dog collar. I'm just the dog of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Simply on his order, I have gone to the West, and by his potency I have achieved. Whatever success has been achieved is by his potency. Prabhupada emotionally held up his neck beads. His neck beads are like dog collar, he informed the devotees. I'm just the dog of my spiritual master. And he didn't say that they should be thinking, but they understood that all disciples should be thinking, that whatever good I may do, even I may do such inconceivably exalted service, I may distribute 200 Bhagavatas a day. That's what Parameshwara, who is doing right now as we speak. He's out there in the grueling hot sun, distributing 200 Gitas a day. So he's thinking, my service is very small, it's very insignificant. I have to do much more. I have to do what Harinamananda did. Harinamananda could do 900 books a day. Just see, I'm way down on the list. And Harinamananda is thinking, it's all by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, and I'm doing very little. I have to do more. And Prabhupada is thinking, I have to do more. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is thinking, I'm not doing anything. We have to do more. Everyone, this is a transcendental psychology of the most exalted Vaishnavas. And in this way, one remains always very humble, giving all credit. Whenever someone glorifies you, this is interesting, in the ashram, sometimes a devotee may come up and say, Prabhu, you're doing such wonderful service. And then our mind starts to get carried away with delusions of grandeur, which is dangerous for us because we still have a colossal false ego and we like to be glorified. Our position is actually precarious. We're in a precarious position because we like to be glorified, but the whole point of devotional service is to give credit to Krishna. So as soon as someone glorifies you, you should immediately think in your mind, you should offer it to your spiritual master and to Krishna. And because it's actually true, before we joined, we were bewildered, foolish, conditioned souls. We couldn't do anything. Our life was full of suffering and bewilderment, weren't we? We were all, you know, struggling just to be happy somehow in the material world. But now we've received the mercy, so we should never be carried away by delusions of grandeur, which our false ego tries to entice us and seduce us into feeling. The material mind is always trying to seduce and entice you into accepting that you're actually, now you've become practically an avatar of Vishnu. Because I followed the four regular principles and didn't fall down one day in 16 rounds. Now all of a sudden I'm very advanced. So we have to be alert to the tricks of the mind. The material mind is very tricky and devious. It has all manner of tricks to divert you from devotional service. We have to be very alert. So Uddhava, he came to Vrindavan and he's pacifying the residents because they're so overwhelmed with love for Krishna. And Uddhava is learning, as he's seeing them, he's seeing a dimension of bhakti he was unaware of. So Uddhava said, O Sridhama, Sudama, Stoka Krishna, Varutapa, lament no longer. I promise I shall bring Krishna to see you here in Vrindavan. Then he went to see Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. When Nanda heard of Uddhava's arrival, he greeted him with a hearty embrace and offered him all facilities. Then he began to speak about Krishna in a voice choked with deep emotion, and his body constantly shook in ecstatic love. And he shed a constant stream of tears. Nanda Maharaj has devotion we cannot even imagine. He can just speak endlessly for year after year. They don't even sleep at night. They just go on speaking about Krishna. Such is his devotion. Nanda said, without Krishna, the groves and gardens, the great Yamuna River, Govardhan Hill, all the forests of Vrindavan, the cows and trees and flowering plants, indeed the entire universe is flooded with poison. Even the most enjoyable Sri Vrindavan Dham without Krishna is flooded with poison. That's such as Nanda Maharaj's devotion. This life of eating and sleeping without Krishna, whose eyes are like great lotus petals, is wretched and miserable. Actually, they didn't even eat and sleep. Just thinking about eating and sleeping. They didn't even think about eating and sleeping. Just this ordinary mundane existence without Krishna is intolerable. They're expressing it's actually intolerable intensity. Like a chakora bird that lives only to see the moon, I live only in hope of seeing my beloved son once again. Absorbed in thoughts of Govinda, sometimes speaking like a madman, sometimes becoming silent, the hairs on his body standing erect, Nanda Maharaj rested his head on a pillow. As Sri Krishna's friend Uddhava looked on in great amazement, Nanda drenched the pillow, his garments, and the couch with his tears of love. Completely drenched the couch with his intense, loving mood of separation. Upon hearing of Uddhava's arrival, Mother Yashoda abandoned all social custom. With milk flowing from her breasts and a torrent of tears issuing from her eyes, she ran to meet Gopal's messenger. Approaching Uddhava, Mother Yashoda inquired of Krishna's well-being and probed the many details of Krishna's personal habits known only to mothers of deep affection. Speaking with great emotion, she recounted Govinda's many pastimes, sometimes ranting, sometimes crying, sometimes speaking in a whisper. Like one possessed by the spirit of Krishna's separation, Yashoda flung open the gates to her heart and released a flood of spiritual emotions that submerged Uddhava in its wake. So such was her spiritual emotions are compared to a tidal wave that swept away Uddhava. He was so struck with emotion. Then he went to see the gopis. Actually, it's a progression. The coward boys have a love that's so great even the Vaikuntha Vasis cannot understand it. But greater than the coward boys is the love of Nanda and Yashoda. And even greater than the love of Nanda and Yashoda is the love of Srimati Radharani and the gopis. Uddhava saw beautiful Srimati Radharani tormented by separation, as slender as a new moon, decorated with ornaments of ecstatic love and constantly chanting, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Glorifying Radharani with wonderful prayers, Uddhava cheerfully addressed the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, saying, O Radhika, dearly beloved of Krishna, your lotus-eyed lover whose mind is fixed on you at every moment of every hour of every day has ordered me to deliver this letter to you. Anxiously waiting to complete his duties, Govinda cries an ocean of tears in your absence and eagerly awaits the day he can rush back to see you here in Vrindavan. With that, Uddhava handed Radha one very special letter, fragrant with the scent of Krishna's affection, along with 100 auspicious letters for each of the 100 gopi groups of Raj. Gently taking the letter from Uddhava, lovely Radharani gazed at it in wonder, overwhelmed at Sri Krishna's touch. Touching the letter, she felt like she was touching Krishna directly. This is Tadiya, the great science of Tadiyanam, those things in relationship with Krishna. Holding the letter in her lotus bud hands, her eyes full of tears, her lips trembling, she gazed at the letter as a thirsty traveler in an oasis considers the water there in the oasis. Touching the letter to her head, then to her soft lotus eyes, she then held it tenderly to her heart, while remembering Sri Krishna's lotus feet. Reading the letter in a soft, plaintive voice, Srimati Radharani shed large, sorrowful tears. Overcome with love, trembling like a leaf, she then fainted like an uprooted tree. Such was the intensity of her emotions. She fainted like an uprooted tree. Many Sakis, that means her female friends, Sakis, who were alarmed by Sri Radha's dramatic feint, anointed her body with lotus pollen, sandalwood paste, and camphor. They fanned her with bunches of leaves, stroked her forehead with damp cloths, and softly sang the names of her beloved Krishna. As lotus-eyed Sri Radha regained consciousness, Uddhava observed her waking to be a greater source of pain than her swoon. Overwhelmed with despair at Sri Krishna's absence, she cried, "Alas, where is my sweet Krishna? Where is the moon of Gokul with his flute pressed to his lips? Please tell me where I can find Krishna." So it would appear to a materialist as though the great devotees are suffering, like Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda and Srimati Radharani. But actually, it's the highest pleasure. These feelings of separation are such a high kind of pleasure that Krishna devoted an entire pastime, these final 18 years in Jagannath Puri. Krishna came as Lord Chaitanya just to relish principally this kind of mood of devotional service. There are many pastimes of Krishna, but Lord Chaitanya actually concentrated on this particular mood, the mood of separation from Krishna. So if you read the Antya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, you find Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri just relishing this mood of separation. So since Krishna can choose to do anything he likes, obviously this is not a kind of suffering, because he chose this kind of mood. This is a principal mood, the topmost. Prabhupada actually says in Madhyalila chapter 4, this is the highest mood, the highest ecstatic mood of devotional service, is the mood of separation. It exceeds even the mood of meeting with Krishna, because meeting is not as intense as the separation, which has the anticipation, the longing, and the anticipation builds up. There has to ultimately be a meeting, otherwise there couldn't be an infinite separation without an occasional meeting. So you find in the pastimes that Krishna leaves Vrindavan to increase the devotion of the residents and then returns periodically. So when Krishna returns, it's a very intense festival, and then he goes away, and that's also very intense. And as he's gone, the anticipation of his return builds up so intensely. This is the great science that Sanatan Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and other of our great acharyas are informing us about in their elaborate commentaries on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So although it seems like suffering, if you read this Antilila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's a materialist would think it's like suffering. Lord Chaitanya is lamenting, he's crying, "Where is Krishna? If there were some place I could go to meet Krishna, I would immediately fly there." He said, "My mind is burning day and night and I can get no rest. If there were some place I could go to meet Krishna, I would immediately fly there." That is his mood, again and again, the verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is exactly the mood of Srimati Radharani. As a magnet induces magnetism in iron, Srimati Radharani's weeping caused her friends, that's Lalita, Vishakha, and the other Ashtasakis, Sri Radha's weeping caused her friends and Uddhava to cry a tributary to the river of her own tears. The union of their sorrow formed an attractive lake. They would cry so much it formed a whole lake, which became decorated with many lotuses and is known as Lila Sarovara. The word Sarovara means lake. So there's Bindu Sarovara, there's Prema Sarovara, there's Lila Sarovara. Last night we were hearing about Prema Vaichitya, which means separation, even though you're embracing the beloved. It's an amazing state of consciousness. And Radha and Krishna were embracing each other, and then their combined tears formed a lake called Prema Sarovara. So now a lake is formed called Lila Sarovara. Pacified by Uddhava's assurance of Sri Krishna's return, envisaging him by the groves of the Yamuna, Srimati Radharani said, "When will I again see the Prince of Raj here in Vrindavan, who is splendid as a monsoon cloud, who always holds his magical flute to his bimba fruit lips and is adorned with innumerable good qualities?" So now 8:30 has rolled around. Unfortunately, we are still constrained by time and space. Just one final thing. These pure devotees of Vrindavan had so much love for Krishna that when the gopis were dancing, Krishna reciprocated with them to make the night that they were dancing together. He extended it out to a night of Brahma, which is 4.3 billion years. 4.3 billion years. It's in Krishna book. You can read, this is in chapter 29 of Krishna book. Krishna reciprocated so much with his pure devotees, he extended there that night to be a whole night of Brahma, 4 billion years. So this is, they're actually beyond time and space. In the material, time and space are cruel masters forcing us to do things and limiting what we can do and what we can't do. But in the spiritual world, time and space are devotees, their personified energy, serving the other pure devotees to enhance their loving pastimes with Krishna. So therefore, time, being a loving personality, a servant of Krishna, just expands itself out. Just to increase the loving mood of everyone, just expands by millions of times, just to give everyone supreme pleasure. That's why we should go beyond. See, as long as you're in the material world, as long as you have material desires, the heavy price you have to pay, that was today's Bhagavatam verse. Jada Bharat was instructing Maharaj Ruhugana, as long as you have material desires, you have to reside in the material, just see the heavy penalty you pay. The heavy price you pay for retaining material desires is that you're forced under the control of time and space and old age and disease and the material environment. What a heavy penalty it is. We think that these material desires are relatively benign. Relatively innocuous and benign. Oh, it's okay. I just have a few material desires. That means you have to have a material body to carry out material desires. So you're forced to reside in this realm of matter. So therefore, we should become very intense. Tivrena Bhakti Yogina 2.3.10 Bhagavatam. Akama sarvakama va mokta moksha kama udaridi tivena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 10. The devotional service has to be conducted tivrena. Has to be conducted tivrena, very intensely. Otherwise, you don't burn away the material desires. The material desires linger and fester. They fester and linger like fungus growing within the heart, if you don't work intensely. When you work hard and then you hear intensely, then you're getting yourself out of the material realm. It has to be intense. Tivrena is the instruction. So thank you very, very much. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you. Thank you. I had two questions. Because the mood of separation or vipralamba is considered more exalted, then is there anything like that they are preferring that mood? Because it seems that while they're experiencing that mood, they're desiring to have the meeting. But even though the mood of separation is actually more relishable,
actually, they don't actively desire anything. They surrender fully to Krishna's desires. When Krishna wants to leave, they cry and scream and beg, and Krishna goes away, and then they're plunged in the ocean of vipralamba seva. Actually, it's topmost spiritual ecstasy. And then whenever Krishna wants, they just leave everything up to Krishna. When Krishna returns, we'll relish the sambhoga. That's the Sanskrit term for meeting, sambhoga. We relish the sambhoga, and when Krishna leaves, we relish the vipralamba. Whatever Krishna wants. See, this is actually the mood of pure devotee. And we can cultivate this as a new bhakta. Like I'm noticing some of our new bhaktas are very inspired and ecstatic because they have the mood of full surrender. So they just say, whatever Krishna wants. Anything. If Krishna wants me to water the flowers in the garden, that's fine. If Krishna wants me to bring in the tulsi plant in the morning, if Krishna wants me to go on book discussion, see. If you really want to be ecstatic in devotional service, right from the start, we're just starting out, we're new devotees, and these ones I've been reading about are the highest devotees. But anywhere in between, from mild to wild, if you start out with the attitude of full surrender to whatever Krishna wants, that's what I'm ready to do. That immediately puts you in a great feeling of happiness. Even the newest, brand new bhakta. We just have to study the right attitude. Actually, the temples, Prabhupada's temples, are places for training ourselves with the right attitude. How to please Krishna. The real devotee simply wants to please Krishna. He's not a it's not a devious calculation. Oh, if I try to think like this, I'll get more happiness. Our mind may be devious because it has that nature, the material mind. It's deviously calculating as a Machiavellian strategy. Because I failed to become happy in the material, now I shall exploit Krishna. I'll become happy by pretending to be a devotee, but I'm really interested in my own happiness. In one lecture, Prabhupada said, as soon as you say, I want to do this, I want, that's immediately sense gratification, Prabhupada said. As soon as you say, I want this, I want, no, it's what we really, the goal is to become desireless in terms of having no material desires and just whatever Krishna wants. And in the beginning, we take the spiritual master as our life and soul because we're not qualified to hear Krishna speak. Krishna will not step off the altar. He doesn't come up to me and tell me, oh, Prabhu, will you please do this service for me today? So the external manifestation of the super soul is the spiritual master. So our whole focus in life as a sadhaka, how to please my spiritual master. This is the most important principle in bhakti yoga. How to please the spiritual master. So at every moment we're thinking, it's now 4:32 a.m., what should I do? Or sorry, it's 3:45 a.m., what should I do? My mind says to go to sleep, but Prabhupada says get up and go to Mangalartik. Okay, I'm going to Mangalartik because Prabhupada said. And then you become ecstatic when you come. You may initially, because of Maya, you may not feel like it, but as soon as you do it, then you become very ecstatic. Now it's 5:06 a.m., so it's Tulsi Puja. That's what to do. In other words, there's no ambiguity. What to do, how to please Krishna, is Prabhupada has scientifically laid out the whole day. You don't even have to figure out. You don't have to undergo the difficulty of what should I do to please Krishna. The spiritual master has already said in great detail. It's simply you have to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Prabhupada said in this 1974 Rath Yatra, before it began, he said, I blindly followed my Guru Maharaj. I did not know what the result would be, distributing books. Americans are so fallen, you know, even you distribute books, how will they become devotees? But hundreds of people joined and became fired up because Prabhupada said, I'm just following my Guru Maharaj. Also in Atlanta in 1975, in a Sankirtan Darshan, Prabhupada said the same thing. I didn't know what the result would be. Actually, the result would be, Swamiji, go home. As soon as I told you about the four regular principles, Swamiji, that you go home, Prabhupada said in one lecture in March 1975 in Atlanta. To tell Americans, young hippies, no illicit sex, that's unheard of. And he got them to do it. He got them to surrender. That's magical potency. One time a reporter challenged Prabhupada, there's so many yogis in India with different mystic powers. What's your mystic power? Prabhupada pointed it to his disciples. This is my mystic power. 5 years ago, they were all addicted to illicit sex and drugs. Now they're perfect Vaishnavas, following all principles and happily spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. That's a miracle, actually. If anyone has any intelligence, they can understand that to get a young, unprincipled Westerner to give up drugs and illicit sex, that takes a lot of power. And if you think it's easy, you go out on the street and try to get someone to give up these things. Let's see what we can do. Obviously, we're not. Prabhupada is so empowered. Actually, we can become empowered by serving Prabhupada, but only when we have the mood of being the humble servant, not if we think we have some independent position. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.